Welcome to another episode of Optimum 7 Surge Sessions, our weekly e-commerce, digital marketing, and technology podcast.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about custom software platforms. As you know, at Optimum 7, we hear this from a lot of different prospects as well as clients. There are a few different types of platforms that people request. Number one is they want to increase their current operational efficiencies. Let's just give a quick example. Let's say I have five different websites, and these are all e-commerce websites, and I get orders from these five different websites. But I don't want my team to log into five different sites to process orders because I have only one warehouse. So it becomes a nightmare, and they say, well, John and Michael are logging into website A, and Sue and Suzanne is logging into website B, and I want them to log into one admin. So when we get a business problem like this, we obviously, there are a couple of things we can do. We listen and we identify what the problem is, right? Once we identify the problem, we say, okay, this solution, would this work for you? So we have to consult through that phase. That's the first type of software development that we do custom. The second type is somebody wants to build a business out of a platform and they have a specific concept. And the third one is really in between, where somebody has a business, they have operational problems, but they're thinking a new platform might be able to solve their issues. So these three different types. What we want to cover today is, if you think that you need to improve your processes through software or through automation or integration, what path would you choose? So let's start with a reverse angle. Let's talk about, because that's usually most of the time what customers and users want to hear. What are some issues that we have, maybe top three or top five issues, that somebody comes to us and it's messed up, it's all over the place? How can you organize, when you have 50, 60, 70 employees, a business problem, and how can you move it towards a path of, okay, this is the technical or the software solution that we need? What are the top three to five issues we hear from clients?
Yeah, one of the most common on the e-commerce industry is what you mentioned. So one company having like multiple websites, mm-hmm. You have a lot of issues when it comes to inventory, when it comes to keeping together all the shipping rules, you know, for those three different sites. Sometimes they have a wholesaler and retail sites, you know, how to manage all that from just one platform. There's a lot of platform for e-commerce out there, but none of them has like, you know, doesn't cover 100% every business. So that's when it comes, like, everyone has something special that they need to do that the platform doesn't cover, and that's what we bring, the custom solution.
And we get that a lot, though, and there are so many different paths and so many different issues that we deal with. I mean, it's so complex. You might have an e-commerce platform, you're selling on Amazon, Jet, Walmart, you might have multiple warehouses, you might stock some products and you might be drop shipping some products. Like, it's a mess, right? Mm-hmm. It's so much stuff for you to be able to compete with giants like Amazon and Wayfair and Overstock. Mm-hmm. So the first thing, I guess, is how can I organize that thought process? What's the next step? Let's say I already identified what my problems are. Mm-hmm. What's the next step? What's the next thing you do?
Usually we, you know, what we do is like we get a scope of work. Like, what
if they don't have a scope?
Okay.
What's the first thing that you can do?
So I would say step one is, once you determine the problem, right, think about what you feel could resolve that problem. What would simplify your workflow? What would automate your workflow? What would, you know, make your workflow more efficient? Mm-hmm. And then I think once you have an idea of the tool that you're looking for that will solve that problem, it'll help you go ahead and put together that list of that scope of work, that statement of work that you need to put together, mm-hmm. to present to, you know, your software developer.
And the challenge here is that probably 50-60% of the time, when we hear these requests from prospects or clients, they don't even know what statement of work needs to be. So even, you know, if you are not able to do that, what we would suggest that you do is talk to somebody who might be able to help you. Talk to a consultant. It doesn't necessarily have to be a consultant, but you have to speak to somebody who is technical, who will understand the business problem that you're going through. And for that, he needs to be able to know the platform, your operational workflows, et cetera, and then who can guide you through that process. Because, you know, let's get real about it. Most business owners are not technical. They don't know what they have to do. If I'm talking to a chief operations officer, the guy doesn't know the technical details. Yeah. And another challenge is sometimes we talk to even CTOs or technical people, and they know the technical side of it, but they don't know the operational or business side of it. So as Joe stated, yes, write it down, but if you cannot really write it down, or if you don't know what to write down, find somebody who you trust, who can guide you through the whole process, and take it to a point where it's a planned execution. And let's talk about that for a minute. So when a prospect comes to us, I think the path is we are asked for a statement of work. If they don't, or if you don't have a statement of work, statement of work basically means, you know, a paragraph or two of what the problem is and how you identify or how you think the problem can be solved. Is it a third-party platform? Is it a patch? Is it an integration? Yeah. And then after the statement of work comes the scope. So, yes, Dan, in your experience, and we've done this so many times, mm-hmm. what are some of the essential things when you go to the scope phase? Let's talk about what a scope is actually.
Yeah. So the scope is a phase where we go through the product, go through the, you know, to the quote or to the, you know, to a prospect, and we identify the pain points. So what, what's happening here? What is the issues that the client is having? And we find, you know, we identify all of those pain points and we find a solution for them. So from the technical standpoint, how are we going to solve these issues?
Yeah.
And basically we determine, you know, we scope all the project from top to bottom, every single issue and how we're going to solve it.
And it's usually a long process. It's a long document, right?
Yeah.
It's
usually
10, 15, 20 pages.
It
we
needs
identify.
To be extremely detailed.
Yeah.
It needs to be extremely detailed.
What are, so give us three main things that you need to know to be able to manage the scope. Who writes the scope, by the way?
Usually we have a business analyst, which is the person that is capable of understanding the technical part and, as you mentioned, the operation part. So that person is the one that is responsible to, you know, communicate with the client, understand what is the problem, and find its technical solution for them. That's the business analyst. It usually, after he has that, he meet with our developers, and when we discuss the technical part, and also we discuss about the timeline, this, the, you know, the budget that we have for the project, and you know, all those aspects.
So the business analyst does the scope, but for the business analyst to be able to write the scope, the business analyst needs to speak to the client, needs to speak to you. So I guess your title here would be the tech lead, correct?
Yeah.
You would be the tech lead. You're the guy who knows the code, the platform, and along with the business analyst, or you guide the business analyst to identify what platform we're going to use, what language, what coding structure we're going to use, what kind of methodology we're going to use, how many problems or issues do we have, how are we going to fix that from a functionality standpoint. The scope needs to have all of this. Now, once the scope is done, actually, before we go to the finalization of the scope, even before the scope, we've had certain instances. Somebody comes to us, they have an idea. Obviously, we can't do consultation for free. So, Joe, in your experience, when somebody comes, they have an idea. How do we take them from the idea phase or the problem phase to the end of the scope where we're going to start executing? This takes hours and hours and hours. We can't do it for free. What's the path there? What's realistic for people out there?
So I would say a realistic path, like you said, you know, anytime you go to a consultant or, you know, you're paying for their time. You need to make sure that that individual understands your business. So the first thing that we do is we ask as many questions as possible. We try to inject ourselves into their operation.
How much time can we spend as consultants? And again, our time is valuable. We do custom programming. We do custom stuff. We're very experienced in what we do, especially across different platforms. How much time can you spend without getting paid? 1 hour? Is that realistic?
Yes.
Maybe 1 hour.
I would say that 1 hour is primarily just back and forth communication.
Yeah. So for you to kind of identify what's going on. So most of the time, the issue with clients is we will talk to them for an hour or so, and then we realize we won't be able to, you know, we have to dig deeper. We have to look at more information. We have to have continuous conversations with them. What do you say to a client when we need to spend more time on their project to be able to scope it out?
Anytime that you initiate a conversation with the client and you cannot figure out a solution or put together a scope of work or a statement of work within a short period of time, it is absolutely necessary to just set up a retainer. What that's going to allow you to do is focus more time and energy on figuring out the problem and the solution, whereas without that retainer, you know, you're not going to find anybody that's going to work for you for free. So there are too many unknown variables at that point that you've already recognized, which is why you couldn't figure it out in a short period of time.
And the people who would, and this is my experience, and the people who would do it for free, they don't really know what they're doing.
Of course.
Why would anybody do anything for free if we're talking about a really, really complex solution to a complex business problem?
Exactly.
That includes multiple platforms, multiple warehouses, thousands of products.
And then on top of that, it's gonna require multiple resources. Because again, I'm gonna need a tech lead, I'm gonna need a business analyst, I'm gonna need a lot of resources to be able to compile every piece of data that we need to get that detailed scope of work so that there are no, you know, hiccups or bumps in the future. There's no changes in the scope of work. We didn't miss anything that we then had to go back to. That's why it's very important to take your time in the beginning, make sure that, you know, step by step, your pain point and the solution and everything is detailed, you know.
And sometimes what happens is like, we're talking about 50, 60 hour work. So we cannot, you know, do this for free. Sometimes depending on the complexity of the project, it might take a long time to get this scope out. You know, sometimes you're going to say like, you know, it's worth it for you to spend that time. And the reason is yes, because after you have these, you already identify your problems and the solutions. So you can go to these to any technical team and they will be able to implement the solution for you without, you know, starting from scratch again and explaining your problem.
And would you say that it's safe to say, anytime that you have a project that's going to exceed 100 hours for the actual execution, you're most likely going to need 15, 20, 30 hours for the scope. You know, so the more, you know, the harder the project is, the more detailed the project is, the more time you're going to need to, you know, execute to strategize and put together your scope.
And it really helps a lot. So when you have a big project, more than 100 hours or something that is solving this kind of issue with operations, you need to have a scope, because it happens very often that customer is going to change their mind. Because probably on that first conversation, he didn't bring up all the problems that he had. And then on the middle of the project, he say, no, but I didn't mention this. And that will change the entire, scope of the project and the entire way that we, in the technical team, we're building. Remember, we're creating something that needs to be ready to handle all the future requests that you're going to have. And in order for us to build the right base, we need to have all the details up front. That's why the scope out is important.
Just to recap this, again, you know, we need to, if it's a complex project where we can't nail down within a few hours, we need detailed scope. That scope, you should be prepared to pay, I would say, anywhere from $2,500 to, you know, based on the complexity, to $50,000 for an advanced scope. What that advanced scope is, 10, 20, 30, 40, sometimes 100 pages of every single detail that you can give to a technical team or a team of developers, and they take it and they can move forward from there. It has documentation, it has everything else. But for technical side of things, for people to understand, you know, whenever you're talking about a platform, you have the database structure, the core system that you're going to use, what kind of a framework are you going to use? Are you going to use Laravel or Ignite from PHP? Are you going to use ASP? Are you going to use Python? So and that all changes based on the type of project you're looking for. So from a technical standpoint, all of that needs to be planned out. So let's say we go through the scope. Before we go to the next level, I want to give an expectation of the cost to people. So obviously not everybody can afford, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 for scope. So I want to say, if your operation or if your business operation is doing more than $1 million, it should be okay for you to pay $5,000, $10,000 for a scope out project, because you can't spend $30,000, $40,000 on a platform and integration. It makes your process a lot more efficient. It allows you to grow and scale. And in today's world, especially if you're doing any kind of e-commerce or online lead generation, you need to be scalable. And the only way that's going to happen is through technology. So to continue, once we have a scope, and once we nail down the scope, we say the scope is ready. The scope obviously needs to also have wireframes, workflow, diagram, maybe mockups. So it's not just 100 pages or 50 pages or 20 pages of documentation. it also needs to have the workflow of what happens. User comes, signs up, go to this page, this happens, this integration happens, information is sent there. Once we have the scope, what happens?
So after we have the scope, we will provide a timeline on the cost of the project.
Okay.
And then after that, you know.
So with the scope, we say, okay, here is the scope. And here is what it's going to cost in terms of resources to build this project, correct?
Yeah.
And then we have another call with the client, or maybe we see them one-on-one, face-to-face, and we say, here is what needs to be done. It's a six-month project. For example, it's going to cost $100,000. And then we obviously, once that's approved, we assign a team to it. But what are the clients or the prospects' options once they get the scope?
One, they can execute it with us. They can say, okay,
they can do it with us.
Or they already have a scope out that would, you know, solve the problem. They can, you know, go to a different company if they want to.
So here is what I say always. If you have a project that's over, I would say $75,000-$80,000, open up for a bid. Say, here is the scope, and you got to open it up for a bit. But before you share the scope, sign an NDA with them. Because remember, that scope is a detailed document you just spent $5,000 to $50,000 for. And you don't want to just give it to anybody because they can't take the scope and they can execute it themselves. You already did the hard part.
Yeah.
Scope is really a difficult phase that a lot of people don't go through. A lot of people just wing it. And that's why, you know, instead of costing $50,000, the project might cost you $100,000, and after 18 months, you don't have anything to show for it. And we've been there. We've done that. This is how we've learned how to do this. So it's a very, very important part. You can do it with somebody else, or you can do it with the company that did the scope, or you can open it up for a bid. One thing, do not post it on Upwork. Again, you know, Upwork is for stuff that's, you know, a few thousand dollars here and there. Developers are doing work. If you want good, complex solutions, you have to do it. You have to do this with an experienced company.
Yeah.
So once, let's say they say, you know what, this looks good, guys. We negotiate back and forth. Why don't you do this? 6 months. Okay, let's move on. What's the next step?
Usually we create an execution schedule with our team.
We create an execution schedule with expectations. With milestones, different deadlines, right? And then we assign a team to it based on the size of the project. Okay. When you're assigning that team, and Joe, this is a question for you. There are a lot of integrated things. You know, if we're doing an advanced migration where we're migrating a specific e-commerce site that has 200,000 products from, let's say, SAP to Shopify Plus or BigCommerce Enterprise, you have marketing, you have 301 redirects, you have customer, you have so much stuff going on. How do you do, you have content, so the copywriting team needs to be involved, the marketing team needs to be involved, technical team needs to be involved. Sometimes the finance guys needs to be involved, right? How do you do that integration? How do you schedule that integration between, how do you handle the communication between each other?
We really become one team at that point. Right. Whenever you're working with a migration of that magnitude, you no longer have a marketing team. You no longer have a development team. You now have a dedicated team working on that project, you know, dedicated to that project. So we communicate frequently. Because we can't afford any lapse in communication. There's so many moving parts. And again, we need to work in sync with one another. We need to know when they're ready to put together some sort of migration that's going to affect anything marketing related. Attention to detail is crucial.
And we have the visible execution, obviously, but we have our own documentation on the back end as well. We have our own checklists. We have a full checklist, I think, with 70 different action points of making a site live after a migration. It has to do with 301 redirects, analytics codes, conversion codes, form submissions. You might not be using Google Analytics. You might be using another analytics software like Omniture or whatever. So we have our own, because we've done this multiple times before, we have our own executions as well. So what you're saying is that attention to detail, communicate with the team, and make sure we identify issues before they happen. Okay. So we assign the team. Usually that team includes of a project manager or project managers, a business analyst. Project manager, again, handles and continues and makes sure that the execution is done, certain parts are broken down. Mm-hmm. If it's a big project, we use Jira and Confluence. So we'll break it down in Jira. We'll assign it to different developers. Project manager takes it forward. We have to talk about this because the clients do change their minds and business owners do change their minds. Even when we do a scope, when they change their mind, it needs to go through a change of scope project process. And change of scope, I believe, is done by the business analyst.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What are some issues you have with a change of scope?
As you said, you know, we try to avoid that as much as possible with the scope, and it reduces a lot of that. But even though sometimes, you know, it happens, and anytime there is a change of scope, we need to, you know, come back to the table, review, you know, what we have done so far. How is that going to affect the current code from the technical standpoint that we have done? And, you know, came up with, you know, the solution for that change of the scope and, how, and be clear with the client. This is going to, you know, change expectations instead of cost and timeline. Sometimes it's going to affect the timeline and it's going to affect the cost because we are probably 50% on the project. However, the change of the scope, we got to go back to, you know, 25% because whatever we did is not compatible anymore with the change of the scope.
Correct.
But usually it's that. Go back to the table, you know, readjust the scope and get back to the client, and, you know, adjust the expectations.
Yeah. And the scope helps through this process to avoid any miscommunication because the client, and again, you know, no, nothing against the client, but of course they don't want to pay more money. Of course they don't want the deadline to be longer, right? And they're always going to fight that. And so we have to document and create the right expectations for the client. And another thing I have to say, as a client or as somebody who owns the project, if you delay something 2 days, doesn't delay the project by 2 days. There are dependencies here. So if you delay access 2 days, it might delay the project 30 days. So most people don't understand this. They say, oh, I only took 2 days providing you the access information, but they don't realize that there are so many dependencies for a 6 month execution. At the end, that means that you're delaying the project 30 days.
Yeah.
So we try to set the expectations for that.
What I was going to say was, I think we spend a lot of time talking about the importance of a detailed scope of work for the client, but we failed to mention how important a detailed scope of work is for the agency. And I think a lot of agencies fail to recognize how important that is for themselves. They'll cut corners, they'll skim it, they'll be very broad in their statements on their scope of work. And at the end of the day, when a change of scope comes, they can't go back and say, no, we never agreed to that. They kind of left it a little too, you know, broad, open-ended. And so it really helps to be able to hold one or another accountable for each step of the project.
Yeah. So here are the important points, and then we'll go into some of the details. The important points is communication is key. Make sure that whoever is the development company or the agency, they pick up their phone call. They don't ignore your messages. That's a flag. Make sure you own everything. Make sure you own the hosting account. Make sure you own most of the stuff. When you're signing the agreement, also make sure, you know, is that code being created? Do you own the code? Do you own the web services? It's like you can use Microsoft Word, but you don't own the source code for Microsoft. So we have different relationships. If you want me to build a platform for you, if you want to own the code, it's going to cost a lot more than if you want me to build and sell it to other people. So that's another thing. Don't ever continue working with an agency that does not want to give you an give you access, or that wants to block access, that want to control ownership, unless they have web services or API services, because that's stuff that they have built. They're not going to give you access to that. It's just like asking Microsoft or Apple, give me access to your servers. They would never do that. The fact that you're buying the software doesn't mean you get access to all the technology that happens in the background. Those are some of the key points. Let's talk about, yes, Andy, because you're in this and you do this all the time. Talk to me about the one project that you're proud of, that's a complex project, and what we did with that project.
Yeah, we have done for multiple industries. For one of them is for the healthcare industry. We create an RMA system, a return management system. You know, it's a way to centralize all the returns. They have an e-commerce platform and they say equipment for the whole healthcare industry. And but they're having issues with the returns. Some of these equipments, they don't know, they're very expensive, they have warranty. And sometimes
it's also return and also kind of like support.
Yeah.
Correct? So if I buy a medical device and they do volume, If I buy a medical device and if I am having problems with it, the question is, are you trying to return it? Can you return it and can we fix it? If we have to fix it, is it within warranty? If it's within warranty, where do I track that on a different database with a serial number?
Yeah.
If it's not within warranty, how much is it going to cost for us to fix it, right?
Yep. Not
so
only
it's an
that,
advanced system like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, not only that. Sometimes it's, it might be on the warranty and somebody's going to fix it, but it's going to say 60 days. So I cannot be without an equipment for 60 days. So you need to send a replacement.
Got
and
it.
You need to track that this is a replacement for a for an item that is on warranty and it's been replaced on your warehouses or your, you know. And then when this is ready, you need to make sure that that item returned back.
Correct.
And, you know, all that we're tracking on the database.
Yeah.
Was a, the company was doing that with an Express sheet. So you become you can realize how much issues they have. A lot of people went into the spreadsheet and changing the stuff. And you never know who did what. So we created, you know, a custom solution with different different roles with different access. When it tracks every device, what is at one specific point, and all the history of one specific device, like when it came in, you know, for what different customer it was, you know, was sent to, what item was replacing, and the warranty process is very tough as well because the way they do it is based on the serial number of the device. They identify if the item is on warranty or not, depending on the manufacturer. So it was a challenge. But we're able to fix that through a custom solution with a good scope out of the project and go through a lot of details with the client.
Yep, I got it. And let's talk about some of the other industries. Obviously, I'd say 40% of what we do is e-commerce. But when you're talking about e-commerce, there are so many different functionalities, different types of products, different types of services, people who sell warranty, who want to track warranty. So it gets really, really advanced. But other than that, we've done it for the 3PL, for logistics industry. We've done projects for hospitals. We've done projects for, what else? What other projects have we done for different people in terms of custom solutions?
Insurance companies as well.
Insurance companies.
We're doing a lot of
insurance companies. Yeah, lead generation, obviously. If you're trying to pull, let's say you have an insurance company and you are selling different types of insurance, you don't really provide the insurance. You're usually a broker, so you have to get real rates. And there are multiple API integrations into different systems, so you can get real-time rates. If I want life insurance, if I'm 36 years old and here's my income and here's all of this, give me a rate, right? So most of those APIs in the insurance industry, they don't exist. They use their own custom systems. So, and then again, if there's no API, there's not a place where we can grab the information, we try to patch certain things, correct? We might sometimes create our own API.
Yeah.
They might have EDI or XML or some kind of data source. So we're pretty experienced with that as well. And then the other thing I would say is we've done stuff for the education industry. So it doesn't really matter. Here's I think, a dumb question. Where a prospect comes to an agency or a developer and says, you know, have you done this before? It doesn't matter if you're a custom developer. You don't have to have it done before. It's just, again, scope. I need to understand the problem. And I would also stay away from any company who is just looking at this from a developer or a designer or a programmer standpoint, who's not understanding the business issues.
Yeah.
And when you speak with somebody, it's pretty clear and easy to see if they're seeing the issue and if they're anticipating problems before they happen.
Yeah. And the good thing is, like, as you mentioned, there is no way that you can do the same project custom twice. So it's really hard.
Yeah.
It's like,
every operation.
There's a reason why you're doing custom, because there is nothing out there that fixes that business. I'm working on the industry, it might be, but you even in the same industry, it's always different. Because that's why you're coming to do something custom, because there is nothing that fits your business out there. And that happens to everyone. So it is weird that you do the same project twice.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'd say is a lot of people shoot themselves in the foot because they don't expect to pay so much for development. And we just talked about all these different details here, and this is not easy, and everybody cannot do this. So my rule of thumb for this is, if you do a software, how much are you trying to make money make from that software? If you want to sell it, if you want to license it, or if you're fixing a business business problem, how much will that platform help you grow? So here is the thing, and I ask this question directly to clients and prospects. I'm like, okay, if we do this platform, It's successful, works like a charm. How much you plan to make on it, or how much you plan to save on it next year? And they'll say something like $1 million. And then when I give them a quote of $90,000, they'll be like, this is crazy expensive. Yeah. And I'm like, you're not willing to put in $90,000 to make $1 million?
Yeah.
Because if you have an opportunity to $1 million, I'll put in $90,000. I'll do that for you. So when they're like, oh, my budget for this is $10,000. Wait, so you're trying to make $1 million by spending $10,000. It's like, I got $10,000. I'm willing to put it on that right now. Yeah.
And it'll also be, so what is this, you know, software trying to solve? Oh, well, I'm trying to reduce my personnel. I think that I can have a software, you know, that can handle what they're currently doing right now manually.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how much are you paying them?
Yeah.
Because right now you're replacing employees with this software, yet you only want to pay $10,000 for it. It doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, and then the problem is, you know, I quote you $90,000. Some other company quotes you $10,000. You're trying to compare apples to oranges.
And then 6 months later, you realize they can't get the job done. You come back, and now you end up spending $100,000 because it's $90,000 that we initially...
And more importantly, you lost 6 months.
And you lost 6 months.
Because the only asset that you cannot get back is
time. Yeah.
You can always make more money, you can always increase, get more clients, but you will never get back that time. Mm-hmm. So with that, we'll end it here and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Optimum 7 Surge Sessions. Do you have a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to cover? Or simply have a question about one of the topics we have previously covered? Send us an email to info@optimum7.com or visit our website, www.optimum7.com.